In case you haven't heard, it's officially an Abercrombie summer. The A&F Vacation Shop has everything on your packing mood board. I desperately need their new one piece, the A&F Marina. It's strapless, so flattering, and paired with denim shorts will be my go-to beach outfit this summer. Finally, your suitcase isn't complete without finding that dress. You know, the one for the photo shoot. Abercrombie's boho dresses have that perfect beachy romantic look. Make it an Abercrombie summer. Shop their newest arrivals in-store, online, and in the app.
Hi everyone, welcome to the Tech Entrepreneur on a Mission podcast. My name is Ton Dobbe and I'm the founder of Value Inspiration and the author of The Remarkable Effect. I envision a world where every B2B SaaS startup succeeds because they're creating software that customers would miss if they were gone. And here's why. Research consistently shows that 90% of all startups fail, and that's bad. What's worse, however, is that 75% of SaaS scale-ups fail. Companies that are supposed to have product market fit. Far too few scale-ups create the traction they aspire for and fail for the wrong reasons. And I believe this should stop. And hence I created my business. And the goal that I have with this podcast is twofold. First, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential that we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. Secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what it requires to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. The guest on my podcast this week is Josh Ellers, CEO of OpenGTM.
Too often in go-to-market and in company building in general, we're driven by product market fit. And that's wonderful, but a big portion of that is really identifying, is there security and regulatory fit? Is there a financial fit? Can we get some sort of return out of this investment we're making in this customer? And I absolutely saw that. I had to learn the hard way and lose some very large deals that got me thinking that I think there's a better way to vet these opportunities.
This is Josh. He's got over 15 years of experience leading successful go-to-market functions of high-growth SaaS companies like Metalogix, Qualtrics, and OpenGov. His extensive background gives him a unique insight into scaling SaaS businesses. In 2021, he founded Patry, which was rebranded to OpenGTM in 2023. OpenGTM is a platform to create content that buyers love, create high-intent leads, and uncover the truth behind buyers and pipeline. And their mission? To unite sales, marketing, customer success, and product around the attributes of high-retained customers in order to boost revenue and retention. And this inspired me, and hence I invited Josh to my podcast. We explore what's broken in today's world of go-to-market, especially enterprise software situations. Josh shares his wealth of experience in scaling SaaS businesses. He emphasizes the importance of the sell, design, and build methodology, where market demand pulls product development. And he also explains how their approach helps customers cut through the noise of the crowded go-to-market tech landscape. And last but not least, he shares some big lessons learned on differentiation and growing efficiently. By listening to this podcast, you will learn four things. Firstly, what B2B SaaS companies should look for beyond product market fit to grow more efficiently. Secondly, their framework that drives product strategy in order to build remarkable products. Thirdly, how do you avoid getting caught up in the tech stack rationalization? And lastly, how to expand market scope gradually while maintaining a narrow focus on the ideal buyer profile? Well, hi, Josh. Thank you for making the time available today and being the guest on the podcast.
You bet. Great to be with you and really excited about the conversation.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this is a small world. I realized after having... Yeah, after we started engaging about doing the podcast, because you know a couple of people that I've recently interviewed. This is also, of course, how it started, because you gave a comment on the podcast that I did with Zach. And yeah, I mean, of course, you also know Aaron from Alicio. Small world. So we're going to talk about, of course, your company OpenGTM today. But before we start doing that, a little bit about you. What drives you as an entrepreneur? What do you get energy from?
Me, I get energy out of driving value for my customers, identifying difficult problems, finding ways to solve them, having been in the seats and in the shoes of a lot of my customers from a role perspective, understanding deeply a lot of the issues that they face, especially in today's economic situation. But for me, it's value driving. It is problem solving. And on the outset of that, it's really about seeing the successes of our customers, the light turn on in their eyes and in their organizations, and the value that's driven that drives repeat value for us. We have a lot of customers that started with one product that are leveraging multiple now, and it is awesome to see that value multiply over time.
Exactly. I've got a couple of questions on that. How do you achieve, of course, that? I actually saw a post on LinkedIn today that average software companies or average companies aim for market share, whereby great companies, and I try to call them remarkable companies, they aim for creating the deep share. And of course, Apple is a good example of that with 15% market share, but at the end, 75% of the profits and so on. And I hear a similar story here, which I like. So making the bridge then to your company, you started the company OpenGTM in January 21, I saw, but I also realized there was a different name back then. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. We did start, in fact, there are three tiers to this company since I left OpenGTM or OpenGov. Yeah. And it really started as a consulting company, Patrick Consulting, to help organizations do business with public sector. I had launched the government business at Qualtrics. I had done it prior at a company called Metalogix, which exited to Quest. And then I had, as you saw, scaled up OpenGov. So it started as a consultancy. Then we built a lightweight product to help companies better qualify the large contract opportunities, because that was where the waste was, at least on my teams, spending time on deals, months and months and months, and so many dollars on deals that were not closing. And then that iterated into what is OpenGTM, which is really taking all of that learning and focusing a company on the buyer, understanding the buyer first, and letting that intelligence inform where you go to market and align the company internally around the components of the buyer to create content that is relevant, score deals and leads, forecast revenue, and source leads that are all attached to this buyer core. Companies for so long were spending time, especially in this go-to-market hemorrhaging event that happened over the last 10 years, where all this technology was coming out, and it was really about getting to the buyer. And we're really trying to bring that back and get the buyer and understand the buyer before we get to the buyer.
Very interesting. Music to my ears, by the way, because it follows my philosophy as well. I mean, so many companies just go after everything that moves, particularly the large deals, and have no clue how it's going to close, as long as it's going to close. And therefore, you get all the aggressiveness, making it even worse. So you particularly try to kind of give intelligence around the RFPs, the larger ones, because that's where the waste was. What can you give a couple of examples of that waste?
Absolutely. And this was in our prior iteration of the product around RFX scoring, as we would call it. But the waste is really in two components. Number one, there is a litany of presence around an opportunity like that. So if you have a multi-million dollar opportunity, you will have no short of 30 vendors trying to penetrate that contract. So there's an issue of volume, number one. Number two, the work associated and the money associated with actually getting this proposal up and out costs, in some cases, hundreds of thousands of dollars in time and money. So one thing that we did that we started with was we had a calculator that showed how much time it would take to complete this opportunity and how much money associated. So every time a company decided to pass on an opportunity, I could show them the time and money savings. And anytime they did decide to pursue it, if the score was high enough, we would check very closely to see if they won the opportunity or not, and then if they shifted their perspective. But that is the waste. It is a massive waste. In fact, $200 billion per year is wasted by companies pursuing the wrong opportunities. It includes RFPs, but this includes all sales opportunities. So think of that from a waste perspective. And then a company can look at their own waste and create a subset of, wow, we are spending enormous amounts of money and time and effort on opportunities that have no chance. So what we've done with initially Patry and now with OpenGTM is help a company focus their efforts on the best fit buyers and then let that inform the growth. And we found, by the way, within some of our companies, especially as we started with those big contracts, some contracted their efforts by 3x, meaning they're going after one third of the deals that they were prior, but they were having 3x of a revenue return. So one third of the opportunities and three times the revenue. And that to me, it's wonderful.
Yeah, exactly. That is, it's so counterintuitive, but it's so real because I've seen exactly the same. I've seen it in the company that I used to work for, Unit 4. We sold an ERP to service organizations, governments, professional services type organizations. Once we started to understand how we had to position ourselves, and we started to kind of pick that up in a couple of countries, these countries needed, let's say, a third of the leads, like you just said, to score 4 or 5 times more than they would normally do. And beyond that, because it translates forward, and hopefully you got some experience there as well, not only did those deals close faster, but they closed without giving discounts. These were the customers that would become the biggest fans, so there would be also the customer lifetime value would be easier to grow. And these deals are far more profitable also from a deployment perspective and long-term support because there's a good fit. Do you see exactly the same?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. You know, for me, I experienced that pain firsthand. Mm-hmm. My job was to manage a sales team. And I had a couple of reps, especially at Qualtrics, that were really excitable and would come to me multiple times per week about the greatest opportunity in the history of opportunities. And we would vet it. We would go into it, see if there's product market fit, solution market fit. And if there was alignment from a security contracting and financial perspective too, because that's one thing that we forget too often in go to market and in company building in general, we're driven by product market fit. And that's wonderful, but a big portion of that is really identifying, is there security and regulatory fit? Is there a financial fit? Can we get some sort of return out of this investment we're making in this customer? And I absolutely saw that. I had to learn the hard way and lose some very large deals that got me thinking that I think there's a better way to vet these opportunities.
Exactly, because I mean, back in the days what I'm just talking about, I think we would have dreamt to understand that level of detail that we can have available right now with the technology available. Because, I mean, you don't know. I mean, two organizations of 2,000 people in the same market selling the same product look the same on the outside, completely different on the inside. And which one are you going to win the deal with? That's where this type of analysis comes in place. Inspiring. So that's what you started to build initially, a service business around. Then you created a product. Then the company moved, rebranded to OpenGTM. And now you've turned into a SaaS business. What do you believe has been an early decision that got you to where you are today? That's defining the success that you see today?
For us, it was deciding to amplify our market presence based on this buyer-centric go-to-market methodology. We actually took the RFP product to Dreamforce and we exhibited at Dreamforce. This was 2 years ago now. And we had a decent reception. But the segment of people, they're actually raising their hands with interest for something like that was nominal. And what we consistently heard was, this is really good, but maybe 5% of the businesses we were talking to actually had the pain that we were solving.
Really?
And obviously, yes. At least at Dreamforce, you know, there are tens of thousands of people there. Mm-hmm. And that's not our only sample, of course, of potential customers. But it was something that we were consistently hearing. It was very narrow. And what we were hearing, though, was, you know what, this is great. And this methodology and this qualification curriculum is really interesting. But can it be applied to all of my opportunities? Can I apply this rigor focused on our buyers, on all of our opportunities, all of our leads? Can I create buyer segmentation pages and intelligence based off of this? So after hearing that a couple of dozen times, we realized that we needed to go back to the drawing board and build and enhance that narrow focus to have a scope that opened up to all opportunities and all leads. And because of that, Patry, which was the name of the company at the time, which is the Latin root of patriot, which has a very government heavy connotation for us, shifted to OpenGTM. And where we were selling to largely go to market leaders, and the advent of OpenAI, mm-hmm. and some of the wave that happened, we were opportunistic with the name, and fortunately was available, the domain was available, and we ran with that. But that decision has opened up so much opportunity for us because we're still narrowly focused on the buyer. That mm-hmm. has not changed.
True.
But the way in which we surface details about the buyer and let that intelligence permeate the go-to-market spectrum of operations is different technologically. We've introduced machine learning and AI into our platform, where before it was a survey that was scored and would integrate with the CRM. That was it. That decision's really amplified our presence and has gotten us into a lot of opportunities that we wouldn't have not otherwise been in.
But what I hear is, okay, you widened your market scope. Isn't it also maybe the danger of this? I mean, are you using your own technology, of course, to score where you have your biggest possible product market fit and differentiation. So how do you go about not risking being too broad?
For us, there are three ways that we're doing this. Number one, yes, we use our own technology internally. So we're a Salesforce partner. That's our CRM. We have the integration happening that's scoping all of our existing customers and shaping what we call the ideal buyer profile or ideal buyer persona for the company. And then we actually use that data to source leads. We integrate with solutions like Apollo to use those attributes and go grab leads. So we are still very narrow. Despite broadening market scope, ICP and our ideal buyer persona remains narrow. And in fact, we still have a lot of public sector focused companies coming to us. So for example, we work with the public sector team at UKG, a very large organization. They do about $250 million in public sector business annually, leveraging OpenGTM to qualify opportunities. And then we work with companies as small as some that have 5 salespeople. And there's a sweet spot that we are finding. But that's number one, using our technology. Number two, leveraging our technology, but a different side of it. We're actually proactively creating content using those buyer segmentation attributes that speaks to the buyers. So we're able to, with Outbound, proactively generate leads that complement the leads that we're sourcing cold from Apollo. So we have content that aligns to the personas that we're pursuing. And then third, one thing that we're really trying to do is very much what you're doing here, is amplifying our content presence, especially our searchable content. So having a YouTube channel that's just starting, having our own podcast with Next Gen GTM, amplifying what we have as part of our product set that's called Open Funnel that generates this buyer-centric content, and then housing it within our property Open Content, which you'll see a lot more of with Open GTM. But those three things really centralizing on the buyer, despite widening the market availability, our focus remains very narrow on certain segments of the market.
Exactly. Well, that goes back to your initial point, you know, value for the customers, difficult products, deep understanding of the product, and finding repeat value for them. Brings me to the next question on your history with, for example, Qualtrics. I've always been impressed with Qualtrics. I mean, I wrote my book, The Remarkable Effect. If I would kind of mention one vendor that has always been high in that list, doing things that people start talking about and keep talking about, is Qualtrics. What did you took from them that you're now also applying to OpenGov? Because it worked.
Yeah, and we applied a lot of that methodology to OpenGov as I led go-to-market there, and now to OpenGTM. As I stepped out of Qualtrics, had another role, and then I went to help OpenGov scale up, and then obviously now to OpenGTM, the focus on customers, customer obsession was a term that we often shared, one of our values as a company. And it's not customer worship. A lot of companies get stuck in differentiating customer obsession from customer worship. Customer worship is the customer's always right. The customer dictates fully the roadmap. The customer can get a refund whenever they want, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. No. Customer obsession, conversely, is about aligning to the needs of the customer, deeply understanding the pains and priorities and motivations of the customer. So does our product really align? Having those open conversations about, is this a fit for you or not? And if not, tell me why. On the back end of deals, having win-loss analysis. Our friends are also former Qualtrics leaders at who have founded Closed, who are doing that win-loss analysis, and we subscribe to that. We really love what they do. So customer obsession, taking that from Qualtrics into OpenGov. OpenGov, when I was there, we scaled from 14 million in ARR to 60, and they're doing more than double that today. Had a great exit to Cox. Yeah. And then today at OpenGTM, it's exactly that. We state we are buyer-centric GTM. That's what we're pronouncing to the market. And yes, you're right. That started at Qualtrics and has gone through the spectrum of company experiences that I've had.
Why did you choose the term buyer-centric rather than customer-centric GTM?
Buyer-centric appeals, at least in my mind, and I could be convinced otherwise, by the way, go-to-market and messaging and positioning is fluid, as you know. But for us, it appeals largely to sellers, sales leaders, right? 75% of our buyers are sales leaders. And speaking specifically there, we could augment the messaging to appeal more to the CS and marketing sides of the house with customer specifically. But buyer, we're very interested in who writes the check. Yeah. You know, who is that economic buyer, right? In medic terms, there's a lot there that companies lose deals because they don't have access. They don't know who that is. They don't know the motivators for that person. And then second, it's really about driving value for that person. Sometimes it's a set of people. Sometimes it's a single thread, but it's also multi-threading in the buyer committee of a company. As you know, 7 to 10 people are typically involved in deals above $20,000. So for us, buyer versus customer was a bit more appealing to the sellers that we're targeting.
Let me make a small interruption here. George just made an excellent remark about what sets them apart in the world of sales automation. taking position around buyer-centric go-to-market and owning that. They could have opted to aim wider and zoom out to the customer, but instead, they chose to go specific. And the result? Resonate optimally with the people that become their biggest fans, sales leaders. It's a trait remarkable SaaS companies master. They acknowledge that they cannot please everyone. Then they focus on the essence, and with that, create something valuable and desirable. And you can master these traits as well. And the first step? Simply read my book. I've made the electronic version available for free. Just visit theremarkableeffect.com to grab your copy, and inspiration will spark within 10 minutes. Back to the interview.
Completely agree. I mean, at the end, it's about how do you resonate? And if for a seller, it's about the buyers. And maybe there are two or three buyers that you have to work with. And knowing the customer, of course, is not enough. So I really understand that. And it's another way of, again, getting specific, bringing it into context, which is sort of a theme that I hear here. So you started from a service perspective. Then the company was rebranded, product got out of the door. There's more AI and technology that's going in. And you mentioned also that you started to ride a wave of open AI. Bring me to the point of differentiation. Of course, in the marketing space, it's crazy how many vendors there are. In the sales space, it's possibly even worse. What do you do specifically in order for your company to stand out in a meaningful way?
It goes back to buyer-centric. You know, our differentiator is that we can help companies understand their buyers better than anybody. And in a world where companies are scoring deals and leads, for example, is one of our use cases, scoring deals and leads and predicting revenue based on activity. How often are you touching these people? Are they responding? Intent-driven scoring, et cetera, that exists with companies like Sixth Sense. Our intelligence focuses on the buyer. So there's a lot of opportunity that we're seeing as we can cut through the noise, as we're in opportunities with companies that use complementary solutions like a Clary or a Gong or a Sixth Sense. We can actually grab all of that intelligence and leverage it within our models. So not a lot of companies are leveraging the macro models of Sixth Sense intelligence, Clary intelligence, Salesforce, Einstein, Gong, and synthesizing this information into one big whole. Like OpenAI is opportunistic for us, but opening up and unlocking go-to-market was really interesting. And the way that we do that is by unifying and synthesizing all of the go-to-market intelligence. For us, the more the merrier. As a tight Salesforce integrated partner and HubSpot integrated partner, and over 100 integrations out there available, we love data, and we can clarify what companies are looking at through the lens of the buyer. And for us, that's really what's helped us cut through the noise of the thousands of go-to-market tech out there.
Strong story. One of the things that I've seen becoming sort of a trend in the communication that I see around the challenges in the market is the way that buyers these days are trying to bring their stack down to the essence. Where yours, of course, is like, okay, add one more to it. How are people responding to that these days?
Consolidation is happening. Yeah. You know, from CRM consolidation to their go-to-market tech stack. We do not see ourselves in that arena as much because we synthesize the stack itself. Mm-hmm. So tech stack optimization is the world we're in terms of really identifying those that are providing the data sets that are valuable and those that are not. So we are part of the consolidation scenario in terms of informing the consolidation. And again, you have a long history of messaging, positioning, et cetera. And it's really a position as well, where you have great companies out there, and we're friendly with a lot of, like Copy AI, that are riding this wave of consolidation and saying, hey, consolidate into Copy AI. There's a lot you can do. Consolidate into Notion. Yeah. A lot's happening there. Apollo has a CRM capability now. And because all that's happening opportunistically, speaking with these organizations, doing the consolidation, it's about leveraging OpenGTM to inform the consolidation, the data sets that are valuable, the data sets that are not. And that way, we are a need instead of a want. We are a must-have mission critical solution versus column fodder, as we say in the sales world. So I think that's one. Number two, not only is there a hemorrhaging go-to-market tech stack, there's the AI wave that's driving a lot of that.
Yeah.
A lot of tools out there that are driving the growth. And I think back to the differentiation, different is better than better. That's a statement we often hear. So I can go out and say, we are better than X company because of A, B, and C reasons. Or we can go out and say, we are different. You know, we are different instead of better. And buyer-centric is different. We could say we're revenue intelligence, or we could say we are even go-to-market intelligence. It's not the same. Revenue intelligence, go-to-market intelligence, you get a lot of search and a lot of keywords associated, but who's talking about buyer-centric go-to-market? You know, different is better than better in building a company.
Trait number three in my book. Remarkable software companies aim to be different, not just better. So check that again. But I'm not surprised that this is that you're checking a couple of boxes there already because of the history that you've been through, and the way you're in this. I'd like to have your perspective or your point of view on the market. What do you think in your industry? What does everyone think is true that you think is false?
On the outbound front, very specifically, there's a lot of movement around subpar content generation for email outreach, for LinkedIn messaging. In fact, we tested a product internally from another, it was another vendor. We tried kind of having this AI agent to automate my LinkedIn messaging and make that better. And it was an utter disaster. It was not great. It was not even good. And fortunately, it was a pilot. Not a lot of people got my terrible automated messages. But I believe that the AI outbound subpar generators, a lot of people are jumping on those bandwagons. Lots of venture capitalists are throwing tens of millions of dollars into these companies. And my contrarian mind, being kind of a messaging expert, at least as I call myself, based on experience, I see that as a wave that a lot of people are saying is true and is going to be viable, and it's not yet ready. Now, we at OpenGTM, we actually have a content generation capability. But we've got multiple threads into this. For example, a company can generate a first draft of an article or a social post, but first, we leverage the buyer segmentation details harvested from the CRM. We look at someone's LinkedIn profile and their total history to get context. We look at the company's website. There's a problem solution statement, et cetera. And all of that generates the first draft. We're not out there saying, like other companies, here's a finalized version of something you could put out to market. No way. Here's a first draft that you, with a Notion-like editor in OpenFunnel, you can optimize this. We'll get you the first step. And too many companies out there are saying, we will give you all the steps and automate everything. And I think there's a lot of danger there because trust was already low with email and with messaging. Cold outreach, it's going to be decimated, I think, over the next 6 months.
Yeah, exactly. Glad you shined a light on this because it is a big problem and it will become an even bigger problem. Again, it's this wave of companies that don't know what they're talking about, don't know what to talk about, but know that they have to do something, and because of the noise have to do more, and it's exactly the opposite that that needs to happen. So hopefully something will come to turn it around, and hopefully Google will do some harm there as well, putting people on the 10th page with the content they create. Okay. Looking also at the time, going back to my book, The Remarkable Effect, on the product strategy side, what do you specifically do in order to ensure that the decisions you make on product and what you say yes to and no to is the right thing for your company? And it's the right thing to build that repeat value for companies.
For me, it starts with context. Again, thematically, this conversation's, we've discussed a lot of that. My head of product and engineering was one of the heads of Salesforce engineering at Jacobs, which is a very large organization. And then also has a strong RevOps background, who it's very vital that we're targeting RevOps as not just gatekeepers, but often they are buyers. Yeah. And with his perspective, and then with my history and perspective, we start by knowing that we don't know everything. So we subscribe to the sell, design, build methodology, which is, if we have an idea that we're strong enough about, for example, we're out doing one now that I will not announce until it's announced publicly. And we are closing deals on this idea for which we have a mock, and it's convinced Lance, our head of product and engineering, enough that, okay, we need to go build this. We have made so many mistakes in the past by designing, building, and then selling. Yeah. And in our market today, it's an expensive mistake. I have made extremely large mistakes in that world. And I think for us, the sell, design, build method has proven to create the best products for our buyers and our market. And that's what we subscribe to now. And it's proving out with some of the new things that we're building and some of the old things that did follow that method. But other things that we've built that did not follow that method did not last long from a capability standpoint. So sell, design, build is really the structure that we subscribe to. And that's only with the iterative customer feedback loops, because we could create, we've had some great experience, great ideas, maybe even, but we've learned through harsh experience that unless they're validated by customers and validated by paying customers, people willing to put dollars down and say, yes, this is a great idea, so much so that I will pay X dollars. Uh-huh. Then you've arrived at initial crests of product market fit and can grow into that versus the prior, which is just a wasteful experience.
Isn't this, just to be devil's advocate, a model also whereby if the sale is taking the wrong approach here, they just use this to just sell everything. And then, okay, hey guys, you got something to develop here. So how do you ensure that enough people are showing the buying signs rather than the one-offs? Because I mean, I've seen the same thing happening in the company I used to work for.
You have to start with a core though. So you have to have something that's in production that's sellable. Yeah. And what I'm proposing is that the addition, so for example, our core is this buyer segmentation and analytics. And we've added deal and lead scoring, revenue forecasting, content generation, and lead sourcing, right? Those are the use cases that we follow. And each of the spokes have taken the sell, design, build approach. But the core was, we have a hypothesis and we need to build this kind of segmentation core with some validation. But you're right. Like, I've been in companies as well where it's very sell, design, build from a methodology standpoint, and they're everywhere. You know, they're not nailing down customers because they're selling ideas instead of a product. So my recommendation there is start with a core product And then the attachments and additional functionality of the product are what you use the methodology for. And I've done it the wrong way. I've done it both ways where, you know, it's all, you're selling all ideas and mockups and you just go nowhere. But start with the core, and then the attachments to the core are what you iterate with.
Yeah. And of course, there's balance there as well. And it needs to be at least a couple of customers. But yeah, I think I agree with you. The core needs to be that part. And staying close to, but it also helps at the end, but correct me if I'm wrong, is because you already have such a clear idea about who your ideal customer is, you're also limiting the number of things that go, yeah, completely to the left or completely to the right, taking you off course.
Yes, absolutely. There's always temptation to broaden that ideal buyer persona.
Yeah.
And, you know, there will be fringe use cases that drive some of that, but the market has to pull you that way. Instead of sprinting after this idea, you have to be pulled by people raising their hands and saying, hey, this would be a great use case. But you're right, because we focus so detailed on the buyer, as we open up other use cases, it makes it easier for us to step into validation with them, or, you know, validation or rejection. No, this is not going to work for X, Y, or Z reason. Yeah. And then you turn it off and move on to the next one.
Exactly. Last question then. Based on your rich entrepreneurial history, Qualtrics, Metalogix, OpenGov, now and these days OpenGTM, what would be a do and what would be a don't that you'd like to share with peer entrepreneurs? Something maybe that you'd love to have known 10 years ago, but know today.
Yeah, I mean, in company building very specifically, do not hire ahead of product market fit. I've made that mistake way too often where you think you are ready to scale, but those signs aren't there, but you have a great feeling about it. And that is true for the same conversation we just had around pursuing deals and leads that are a bad fit. It's all about opportunity cost, and you can send yourself down some terrible roads if you invest too early in bad deals, bad leads, and employees that aren't a fit for a pre-product market fit company. That's a big don't. I think on the do side, I will reiterate the methodology sell, design, build. I wish upon starting this company and my other endeavors that I led with that more. Mm-hmm. It's really apparent in companies that do that, and they do that really well, there's something magical about them because they're listening to their buyers and they're listening to what the market is saying, and they're listening to what's going to work, and they ignore the rest. So for me, it's really, I wish I could have really instituted that early on, but I think in future companies that I build, obviously that'll be it. And for us, obviously we're focused wholly on OpenGTM, but those are the two pieces of advice, the do and the don't, you know, for entrepreneurs and for anybody leading any function really.
Exactly. Well, thank you very much for sharing the journey that you've been through. Some very, I made a lot of notes in terms of the things that you said. I think there's a lot of nuggets here that are super valuable based on what you've experienced in the field and what worked and what didn't work. So good luck on the next part of your journey. Where can people go to find out more about OpenGTM or to say hi to you?
OpenGTM.ai is our website. There's a lot there that you can do. Our product is available for free in certain forms. There is a free tier available. And then connect with me on LinkedIn. Search me, Josh Ehlers, OpenGTM on LinkedIn. Would love to connect.
Exactly. Well, thank you very much. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Likewise. Thank you so much.
And this ends my conversation with Josh. And I hope you enjoyed it. And if so, please leave a review on iTunes. And if it inspired you, please share it with other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that you have in your network. Other than that, thank you for tuning in to this podcast. I had the honor to speak to Josh Ehlers, founder and CEO of OpenGTM.
As said, the goal that I have in this podcast is twofold. Firstly, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. And secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what is required to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. Before I close, I have two more comments to make. If you know other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that have a story worth sharing, please send me an email at ton.dobby@valueinspiration.com. Building the momentum all starts with revealing the ideas, and that starts with you. And if you want to know more about my book, or you're interested in joining the Remarkable Effect tribe, please visit my website at www.valueinspiration.com. Thanks for tuning in. And you could do me a big favor by rating the podcast on iTunes or provide me with your feedback directly. I'll see you shortly on a new episode.